for I knew what Bobby looked like under his hand. My stomach began to protest, the whole image threatening a loss of control. But I fought it. I didn't want that as the memory of his wife's burial either. Thad stepped gently into the grave, and Danny, with his good hand, and I, helped lower her down. Once she was in her resting place, Thad carefully climbed out, and we stood there for a minute in silence, giving Danny the opportunity to say whatever he needed to. He didn't utter anything aloud, but I was certain he was saying what he needed to silently. When Danny stood up and grabbed a shovel, Thad and I did likewise, and we filled the grave in. When the work was done, Danny's shovel was completely covered in blood, all the way down to the spade. Doc sat on the porch and watched the process. Once he saw we were done, he came out and put an arm around Danny. "Come on back to the house so I can clean that up," he said. Danny didn't protest, and the two of them went back to the house together. Thad and I carried the shovels back to the shed, stopping by the hose to clean Danny's shovel. But his blood had stained the wood. It would be a lasting reminder of the day. "Tomorrow, we'll have a service for Bobby," I said, as I used my hand to scrub the handle of the shovel.
"That'd be good. We needed to get this done as soon as possible," Thad replied. I nodded. It needed to be done.
"How's Mel taking it?"
Turning off the water, I shook my hands as we walked towards the shed.
"Rough. They've known each other their entire lives. The kids grew up with them their entire lives. It's tough on all of them."
Thad leaned his shovel into a corner of the shed.
"I can relate to how they feel." "I know you can, my friend. I'm sorry for everyone."
Thad looked up into the sky and ran his hands through his hair.
"Maybe someday it will calm down."
"Maybe. But in the meantime, you really need a haircut."
Thad smiled weakly.
"Yeah. Mary said the same thing.
I've got clippers, you know."
"I'll come over later and let you shear me," he replied,
again with a weak smile.
"I'm going to go over and talk to Sarge. They've got those three prisoners. I want to see what they found out. I'll come with you."
We went back to the house. The smell of cooking filled the air as we stepped inside. Jess and Fred were preparing supper, under Kay's supervision, naturally. She sat at the bar, keeping watch over the goings-on in her kitchen. The thought of her kitchen struck me. It was Bobby's kitchen. It was her kitchen before today, anyway. Eric was sitting at the table. I looked over and asked,
"Hey, we're going to see the old man. You want to go?"
He was immediately on his feet.
"Damn right I do."
Thad stepped over to Kay.
"How you doing, Miss Kay?"
She reached out and touched his arm.
"I'm fine, Thad. Thank you for asking.
If you need anything, be sure to let us know."
She patted his arm.
"I will."
We left the house and headed down the road. It was getting late, and the sun was starting its final descent. With the sun closer to the horizon, the temperature dipped ever so slightly. It was a refreshing change, little as it was. Pulling my bandana from my pocket, I mopped my forehead and said,
"Damn, I can't wait for winter."
"Then you'll be looking forward to spring," Thad replied.
"Nope,"
I replied, as I stuffed the cloth back into my pocket.
"I love cold weather."
"What the hell are you doing here, then?" Eric asked.
"I have no earthly idea. I've left several times, but I always came back for some reason."
"I couldn't wait to get here," Eric replied.
"I grew up in the Midwest. Snow is pretty to some people. Usually it's people that don't have to shovel that shit before school in the morning."
I looked up into the fading sky where countless insects darted to and fro.
"I wish 3 feet would fall right now," Eric howled.
That'd make this walk real pleasant. I laughed. We wouldn't be sweating like we are.
I'll take the heat, Thad said. I like the heat.
Never was a fan of the cold. Winter here in Florida isn't too bad. I like it.
As we passed the bunker, Walner stepped out.
Hey, guys.
I smiled.
Looks like you're still here.
He smiled broadly.
Permanently now, thanks to Top.
I'm glad to have you fellas, but I feel bad you always have to be out here.
He waved me off.
We're good. We work in 3 8-hour shifts. Believe me, we're all good with it. The food is better here. We're in a real house, which we've cleaned up nicely now.
He nodded at Thad.
And thanks to Thad here, we even have running water now. This is great.
Glad to do it for you fellas, Thad replied.
So, don't worry about us.
His tone shifted.
I'm really sorry about your loss. We didn't know Bobby very well. She brought us supper here while you guys were gone, and when we went to the house to eat. She was always very nice.
It's terrible.
I nodded.
Thanks.
We're on our way now to see what the old man's got out of the perpetrators so far. We saw them when they brought them in. What are you going to do with them?
Remains to be seen, I replied.
They're an invading force. What do you think we'll do with them? Eric asked.
Walner nodded.
There were lots of rumors about what happened out here. Sheffield was always ranting about it.
I snorted.
Yeah, he's a peculiar sort.
Now that Top is running things, it's going to be different, Walner replied.
What? Thad asked.
I looked at him.
He doesn't want a big deal made of it, but he has just been promoted to full bird colonel.
What? Eric shouted. Are you serious?
I nodded, but don't say anything. He really doesn't want anyone to make a big deal about it. Sheffield still runs things in town, but he now has to answer to the old man.
I'll bet that didn't sit well with Sheffield, Thad said.
Actually, he was fine with it. Relieved, actually.
I can see that, Walner said.
He was always stressed out. He may be a captain, but he's no officer.
I smiled.
Yeah. Sarge said he was a military hobbyist.
Walner laughed and pointed at me.
That's it. That's it exactly.
All right, buddy. We gotta go check on him.
I held my hand out and shook his. We appreciate what you guys are doing.
He gripped my hand tighter.
It's our pleasure, really.
As we headed down the lane towards Sarge's house, Eric said,
I can't believe they made him a colonel.
I laughed out loud when I heard it, pissed him off, but all I could picture was an old southern colonel, you know?
Like Colonel Sanders?
Thad asked seriously.
I nodded and wagged a finger at him.
Yes, but don't start on the chicken thing. We've already had that discussion.
Thad smiled in reply.
What chicken thing?
Which one is best?
Hands down, Bojangles.
Thad and I both looked at him in horrified shock.
You need to stop talking now. Your Yankee is showing, I replied, as Thad laughed.
I'm not a Yankee, Eric grunted.
Were you born north of Tallahassee? I asked.
He didn't answer right away, and I added,
Then you're a Yankee.
That didn't sit well with Eric, and he mumbled, North of Tallahassee, my ass.
It got Thad to laughing.
And I was glad to see it. This silly-ass little conversation pulled us, even if just momentarily, out of the darkness that was closing in around us.
The striker was sitting in front of Sarge's house, and as we walked around it, we saw the garage door was open. It revealed what had become an all-too-common sight. Micah was hanging from the ceiling, naked. Beside him hung one of the Cubans. The other one was too injured for such treatment.
but he was strapped to a chair where he could see everything that was happening. Sarge was sitting in a chair facing the men. He was leaned back with his feet outstretched and his hands stuffed into his pockets. Doc, Ted, Mike, and Dalton were all there as well. Doc, being a man of medicine, was off to the side. He generally didn't take part in interrogations. Mike and Ted stood on each side of the two men, and Dalton was behind them, a length of hose in his hand that I recognized. It got Thad to laughing, and I was glad to see it. Micah didn't look well. He hung limply from the ropes, his full weight on them. His body glistened with sweat, and his breathing was heavy. I could see red welts on his sides that I was sure extended across his back as well. The Cuban was in a similar condition. Both men looked as though it had been a long afternoon. Walking into the garage, we looked the scene over. "Does that one speak English?" I asked, pointing at the Cuban. Dalton nodded, and Sarge replied,
"Just like a cue ball. The harder you hit him, the more English you get out of him."
Micah looked up weakly. I stepped up in front of him and looked into his eyes.
"You know, I never did like your ass."
I turned and walked away from him. Sliding another chair over beside Sarge, I sat down.
"So, what has he had to say?"
You know, the usual shit. He doesn't know what we're talking about. Has no idea who these hombres are. Never seen them before."
"Really?"
"That's how it started out," Dalton said. Then he ran the piece of hose down Micah's flank, who recoiled at its now familiar cold touch.
"He's starting to come around. He's been a busy boy. He was working with the DHS before we pushed them out. He's the one that was spraying the farm with herbicide. He was responsible for a number of things," Sarge said.
"I knew it," Thad said.
I shook my head. "Why the hell did they spray the farm?"
"They didn't want us to succeed," Sarge replied. "They wanted suffering, thinking the people would beg for the feds' help. But that ain't all. He was also involved in the bombing at the park."
Sarge looked at me and said,
"His partner was a tough bastard for not telling me that."
Micah looked up, and I caught his eye.
"Don't worry," I said. "You'll join him soon."
"What about that one?" Eric asked, pointing at the Cuban.
"He's more willing to talk. Just a soldier. They were told they'd be able to walk across the country. Apparently the Russians and the Cubans got together to carve up the East Coast. The Ruskies also had a deal with China, giving them the West."
"Was he spotting for them?" I asked.
Sarge snickered. "Yeah, he was. Still won't admit that."
He nodded to the beleaguered Cuban and added,
"But he did. They were working together."
"What about the guy working on the net?"
"Oh, the Chinaman."
Sarge looked at Eric.
"You were right about him. He was who you thought he was."
"I knew it was him. I saw his body. If he was still around here, then others probably are as well," Eric replied.
"Well, he ain't around anymore," I said.
"Shane and Sean put his ass in the dirt."
Micah looked up briefly before dropping his head again.
"That's right, asshole. We bagged him, too."
"What do you want to do with them?"
Sarge asked. I thought about it for a moment, considering the options. I thought back to the bombing in the park, about what happened there. The stinging smell of alcohol mixing with the acrid smell of smoke and metallic odor of blood and flesh. The crunch of glass under my boots as we walked around the scene. It was so much like the last scene at the park, the one that killed Bobby. It was almost like stepping back in time, like revisiting a nightmare in troubled sleep. The image of Bobby's charred and smoking body as I slowly pulled the zipper up over her face. I remember the image of Danny's hand, the missing fingers, and the rivulets of tears cutting through the black dirt and filth on his face. Then of my girl sitting on the couch, and little bit looking over her shoulder and asking me if she were going to die too. As I was considering all this, my radio crackled. It was Shane.
Morgan, we've got issues.
What's going on? I asked.
People are gathering. They're saying the attack was the army's doing. They're nearly rioting.
I looked at Sarge.
What the hell are they thinking? That we did this to ourselves?
Someone is stirring this up. I don't think they came up with it on their own, Sarge replied.
Sarge scratched the stubble on his chin.
Ask him to get Cecil to calm them down. He'll be able to handle this until we can get there tomorrow morning.
I nodded and relayed the statement to Shane, telling him to get Cecil to try and calm them down. He agreed and said they could handle it until tomorrow.
It hasn't gotten out of hand yet, he replied.
I looked around the room, at the men hanging from the rafters, the others, Mike, Ted, Doc, and Dalton, watching them from the perimeter. Settling my eyes on Micah, I said,
"We'll take them to town tomorrow and hang them in the park."
Sarge's head bobbed as he processed this.
"It's good. It's good and proper."
Then Micah's raspy voice broke the silence.
"And what good will that serve?"
I looked over to see his eyes cast up as he was too weak to lift his head. He shook his head from side to side. He started to say, then glanced at his Cuban compatriot before correcting himself.
"I am worth more alive than dead."
A slight smile cracked his lips.
"I know what's going on."
"Where?"
He jerked his head towards the Cuban.
"The rest of them are."
His smile spread.
"Where the Russians are."
He was playing his ace, or so he thought.
Sarge's cackling cut the weight of the moment.
I was thinking about what Micah had said, but Sarge wasn't impressed. Instead, his head rocked back and forth.
"Thank you," he shouted. "Thank you for giving me that. I was wondering just where the limit was. Just what you did indeed know."
Sarge rose to his feet.
"But now I know."
Sarge looked over at me and said,
"Don't worry. By dawn, we'll know what he knows."
Fear washed over Micah as he asked the question for the answer he already possessed.
"What? Why? Why not keep me alive?"
He seemed to find strength and started to fight against the bindings.
"You can't kill me. You need me."
I stepped past Sarge and close to Micah's face. I leaned over and looked into his eyes. I knew how he'd managed to this point. How he would so easily, quickly, cast his allegiance to the strongest.
"You know the problem with selling your morals?" I asked.
"Eventually, there are no more buyers."
"I always wondered why you bothered me."
I wagged my finger at him.
"Something about you always ate at me. Watching you slink around. And now knowing you were making deal after deal to keep yourself safe and comfortable."
I grabbed his chin and lifted his head.
"But there are no more deals. You cannot take this and turn it into a better situation for yourself. You've burrowed your way in for the last time. Tomorrow, you will hang."
Micah glared back at me. I could see he was trying to formulate his response, but he wouldn't get the chance to issue it. Sarge stepped past me, clapping my back as he did.
"Tomorrow is a long way off, and we've got a lot to do," he said as he gripped my shoulder and turned me away from Micah. "Go on and get some rest. Tomorrow, in town, he's yours. But tonight," Sarge said,
as he looked at Micah and added, "But tonight, his ass is ours." A fear washed over Micah's face, and his tongue flicked out of his lips as a lizard would.
"I've already told you everything I know."
As I stepped away, Sarge snorted.
"Well, now, we know that's not the case."
Sarge looked past Micah to Dalton and added,
"Don't we?"
Dalton nodded grimly.
"Indeed.
And I believe you are well acquainted with my man Dalton,"
Sarge said to Micah as he spun him around to face the big man.
"And all we've done to this point was with the aim of keeping you alive."
Sarge laughed and patted Micah's shoulder.
"But that's no longer an issue, now is it?"
The last words Sarge spoke directly into Micah's ear. Panic gripped the naked man as his new reality swept over him.
"But I can help you. I know where they all are. I can tell you," Micah pleaded.
Sarge stepped behind Micah and tousled his hair.
"Oh, you will. See, now we know you have more to tell us. And we know you want to."
Sarge stepped back in front of him and asked,
"You do want to, don't you?"
Micah nodded.
"Yes, I'll tell you everything."
Sarge stepped back over to his chair and took a seat. He chewed on his thumbnail as he made a show of thinking.
"That's good. It'll make all this easier. But,"
he paused and looked at the nail,
"we have to be sure you're telling us the truth. We have to believe you."
"I'll tell you the truth,"
Micah shouted, believing he'd found his salvation. Sarge looked past Micah to Dalton and asked,
"Do you believe he'll tell us the truth?"
"I'm not sold," Dalton replied.
Micah was reinvigorated and now stood on his tiptoes. He tried to spin around to see Dalton, but Dalton prevented him from doing so.
"I will. I have no reason to lie now."
Sarge leaned back in his chair and smiled.
"Good. That's what I wanted to hear."
I listened to the exchange with little interest. Whatever the information we could extract from this little slug paled, at least in my mind, to the value he would serve swinging from a rope on the gallows in the park. His death will serve a couple of public purposes, and a private one as well. The people of Northern Lake County have not yet forgotten the evils of the DHS and what they did to people here. While we thought we vanquished that particular evil, this will demonstrate that the threat still exists. It will also demonstrate the fact that we are still very much fighting it and will not shrink from the threat. On a personal level, it will be vengeance for Bobby, for the pain her death has caused my friend, my wife, and my daughters. She was someone who never caused harm to another person, innocent in the evils of the world around her, but just another tick mark in the column for those that, still it would seem, seek to oppress or rule over us. It was this last thought I had the hardest time with. It's only natural that there will always be those that seek to subjugate others, to lust for power and control. But control over what? Our society has so little now of anything. What good is it to rule over a wasteland, other than to serve one's own ego, perhaps? Because with the power, even if sought vindictively, comes responsibility. And it was the latter I sought to avoid, not covet. I willingly accept my responsibility for myself and family, but I damn sure didn't want it for everyone around me. It was as foreign an idea to me as space travel at the moment. Our once soft lives were now hard, and the thought of willingly, wantonly, trying to complicate it further through conquest was unfathomable to me. But the fact remained, there were those that didn't think this way, and it was because of them, I,
had to stand where I did. "You want to live, then?" I asked Micah. He nodded eagerly, his eyes wide with the thought of saving his skin. "Then you need to give a full accounting of your actions, since the beginning. You will read them aloud tomorrow in the park, before the community, so all will know your scheming." Micah nodded enthusiastically. "I'll do it." Sarge looked up at me and didn't say anything. I could see he was thinking. "Good. Then you can make your confession tonight. Dalton will be here to make sure your memory doesn't fade," I replied. I looked around at the guys. "Tomorrow morning we're going to have a service for Bobby before we go to town." Solemn nods were the only reply. "I'll leave you to it then. I've got other things to attend to," I said, as I headed towards the open garage door. Sarge got up and followed me outside, waiting until we were out of earshot of the others.
"Then what?" he asked.
"Then what?" I asked. He stuffed his hands into his pockets and looked at the ground.
"Tomorrow, after he reads his confession, as you call it, then what?"
"We hang him," I replied easily. Sarge nodded.
"I figured that's where you were going with it. Having him list his dirty deeds in front of everyone is a good idea. They'll never believe us if we just say it wasn't us."
I nodded. "That's what I was thinking, too. We need the folks in town to know we're trying to help them at best, and not trying to kill them at the least. This will serve to do that."
"And him swinging from a rope will also send a message that we aren't going to tolerate this sort of bullshit."
I let out a breath and looked up as a mosquito buzzed in my ear. "We'll let Mitch look at his confession in the morning. Have Micah sign it in front of him to keep up the appearance. But in the end, we will stretch his neck. We can't tolerate people that don't want to work for the benefit of everyone. And we certainly can't tolerate those that will actively conspire against it." Sarge laughed.
"Careful. Your commie is starting to show."
I grunted.
"Whatever.
We're not forcing anyone to do anything for the benefit of others. If you want to benefit, you have to provide, labor, something. We're not making anyone work so others don't have to. It's not the same thing."
"I know," he replied. "But when words like the greater good start getting tossed around, it's a short trip to Marxism."
I stopped and turned to face him. "What we are doing is so far from that twisted logic as to not even be on the same plane. We're simply trying to save this community, lives. What we did yesterday was for the greater good. We handed out food. We tried to provide some semblance of order. But we're not forcing it on anybody. Everyone is free to stay or go, participate or not. I don't give a shit either way."
"And I'm with you on that. But those other systems, they exist because those men believed it was easier to achieve their idea of community through force. And in a way, it is. It removes responsibility from the individual. And at times like this, people will willingly accept it. I just want to make sure you know how easy that is. How fast people will beg for it.
You don't have to tell me. Just look at what the country was like before this happened. Decadence is the last stage of a crumbling empire." I laughed. "And we are a hell of a long way from decadence at the moment." Sarge pinched his nose and blew a snot rocket into the dirt.
"Damn straight. We'll get a full accounting out of him tonight."
He looked back over his shoulder into the garage.
"I don't think we need anything from the Cubans. They'll just say they were soldiers following orders."
"And they are. But they're invading soldiers on a sovereign nation's land. They can swing with him. But that's up to you. Micah is a civilian, and Mitch and I will deal with him. They are soldiers, and therefore your problem. So you can sort out what's right for them."
It's the same in the end, the old man replied as he arched his back, stretching it. The rope. I left them to their work and headed back towards the house. As I walked, I plucked the mic from my plate carrier and called. Hey, Shane. In a moment, he responded.
What is it, Morgan?
You still have that Jap's body?
Yeah, we're getting ready to bury him now.
Don't. Bring him to the park tomorrow.
He didn't hesitate in his reply. Probably relieved he didn't have to dig the grave in the heat.
No problem. I'll have him there.
How's it going? People still grumbling?
There's still a lot of talk that the army did it on purpose, but Cecil got a lot of them calmed down. Something more needs to be done, though, or it's going to get out of hand.
We're going to do something tomorrow that should take care of it.
Okay, good. We'll see you tomorrow.
As I continued towards the house, I thought of what needed to be accomplished. Of course, the service in the morning was weighing heavy on my mind. I'd never considered the possibility of having to bury one of the women in my life. It may be Bobby this time, and that's horrible, but it could have just as easily been Mel. And that thought was one I couldn't bear. But there was one small project I could work on that would keep my mind off things. As I passed the shop, I saw the roll-up door open and could hear someone inside, so I wandered over to see who was in there. I found Thad working on a piece of wood, sitting on two sawhorses. He had a chisel in hand and was carving into its face. I stepped up and looked over his shoulder. He didn't pause his work, simply asked,
"What do you think?"
I put my hand on his shoulder and replied, "I think it's really nice. Danny will appreciate it." Thad laid the chisel down and took up a small propane torch and lit it. He ran the flame back and forth over the words he'd carved, charring them to a deep black. The rest of the wood he singed to a light brown. I helped him for a bit as we fit the two pieces together. He had the idea of drilling through the back of one into the back of the top piece and fitting a dowel. Using some wood glue, we clamped the two pieces together for the glue to dry.
"I think everyone will appreciate it," I said. "It's a nice cross."
Thad looked at the cross and said, "I wanted to build her a casket, but it would take a lot of wood and more time than we have." I patted his back. "I think the body bag will have to suffice for now." I nodded at the cross. "This will give everyone something to look at and remember her."
"I'm going to varnish it, I think," Thad said as he inspected his work.
"Sounds good," I nodded.
"I've got a couple of things I want to do. I'll see you later."
"Thanks for the help."
I nodded as I left him to finish his monument. Both sad and noble at the same time. The dogs were lolling in the driveway when I came through the gate. Their tongues hung from their mouths into the dirt and pine needles as they tried to cool themselves. They must have been running after something. I stopped to scratch heads and pat flanks. Their tails thumped around, kicking up small clouds of dust. I envied them. To be a dog and have no concern, let alone knowledge of the bigger powers at play around them. Most people didn't look twice at a dog today. Unless they were hungry, of course. Then, being a dog could be a real liability. I went over to the old Suburban. It was covered in leaves and pine needles and looked as though it had been sitting there for years, when it had only been a couple of weeks. I popped the hood and looked at the two batteries. I wanted to try to restore them, even if they only lasted a short time. I'd need some tools, so I headed to the house. The house smelled wonderful, and I found Mel and the girls gathered around the dining table.
"What smells so good?" I asked.
Mel got up and went into the kitchen and returned with a plate for me.
"Here. Made you one too."
I sat down, leaning my rifle against the wall.
What is it?
It's a barbecue sandwich. Kay baked rolls and I slow-cooked some of the beef in a crock pot. It came out really well.
It's really good, Dad, Leanne affirmed. Her sisters both nodded their agreement.
I picked the sandwich up and sniffed it.
This smells amazing. And it was amazing.
Wow, I said, as I licked sauce from my fingers.
This is terrific.
We chatted around the table as we ate. Normal talk, nothing morbid. Nothing about Bobby. Sad as it was, life had to continue. Our lives had to continue. So we talked about how good the food was, about the cookies Kay was baking for dessert, and about the coming weddings. Bobby's death put a damper on the coming nuptials, but they were still going to happen, and it gave us something positive to focus on. Well, for some to focus on. I rarely thought about it. After eating, I told Mella I was going out to work on the truck. Little Bit said she wanted to help and carried her plate into the kitchen before meeting me at the back door. I used the moment to remove the plate carrier. Any reason to get out of the damn thing. Before heading out, I grabbed a box of baking soda and bag of Epsom salt. We walked out to the shed while she told me a story about a squirrel she had watched earlier today as he buried acorns. She said every time he would bury one, another squirrel would run over, dig it up, and steal it. I laughed when she said they should be nice to one another.
That's critters, kiddo. Only the strongest survive, I said.
Her lip curled and she replied,
Or the sneakiest.
Or the sneakiest, I agreed, with a pat to the head.
What are we going to do? She asked, as I put tools and other items I'd need into a bucket.
We're going to fix the batteries in the truck.
You're going to charge it? She asked.
Yeah, but we've got other things to do first. Once I had everything I'd need, I carried the bucket out to a small yard cart and set it down. Naturally, Little Bit wanted to pull the cart. I only had to help a little. At the truck, I asked her for the wrench and the bucket. She handed it to me and I removed the two batteries from the truck. I asked her to set out a dishpan-type container I'd brought as well, as I popped the caps from the batteries.
What are you going to do? She asked.
We're going to pour this old acid into there.
Can I do it?
I smiled.
No, sweetie. The batteries are very heavy, and this acid can burn you. We have to be very careful.
I slowly poured off the first battery, ending with it held upside down over the tub to get as much of the acid out as possible. Then I drained the second one. Once the batteries were empty, I mixed up a solution of baking soda and water.
Grab that little funnel and stick it in one of those holes, I said.
What's that for? She asked, as she placed the funnel into one of the open cells.
We're going to clean the battery with this.
The inside? She shouted. I smiled and nodded.
Yeah, the inside.
We filled the cells of both batteries with the solution. Then I capped the batteries and rocked them back and forth. Little Bit tried to help, but discovered just how heavy the batteries were. After agitating the solution in the batteries, I poured them out into the tub. The baking soda would help neutralize the acid already there.
Now what? Little Bit asked.
I rubbed her head.
Now we need to go inside for the next part.
I picked up the Epsom salt and handed it to her.
Can you carry this?
She cradled it against her chest with both hands.
Yep. It's heavy, but I'm strong.
She made me smile, and we went back inside. I told her to take the salt to the kitchen, and I'd be right there. I told Mel I was going to use the stove for a minute, before taking out a Pyrex container. I measured out 4 cups of water from the Berkey filter and poured it into the bowl, then lit the stove. Setting the measuring cup on the counter, I told Little Bit to fill it with the salt.
Is it safe? Can I touch it?
I nodded. Yep, it won't hurt you. She reached in and grabbed a fistful of the crystals and let them fall through her hand into the cup. She repeated this until the measuring cup was full, and there was quite a mess on the counter. I tested the water with my finger. It was getting hot, so I started slowly pouring the Epsom salt in while Little Bit stirred it with a spoon.
This is fun. It's like we're cooking, she said with a smile.
We are cooking. We're cooking up science, I replied, with an exaggerated smile as I tickled her sides, getting a squeal out of her. I added another 2 cups of water, and we measured out another 2 cups of salt and continued the heating and mixing process until all the salt was dissolved. I was using a 2-to-1 ratio of water to salt, and the process went faster when the water was heated. With the solution ready, I told Little Bit it was time to go back outside. We walked back over to the truck, and she held the funnel while I poured the solution into each cell until both batteries were full.
Now what? She asked.
As I was placing one of the batteries on the cart, I replied, Now we have to charge them. We'll take them to the shop and put the battery charger on one of them tonight. After setting the batteries on the bench, I connected the charger to it, on its lowest setting. The needle jumped up, showing it was taking a charge. Now we wait, I said.
That was fun,
Little Bit replied, as we walked back to the house in the dark.
You're a good helper, I replied,
but it's time for you to get ready for bed. She yawned.
But I'm not tired.
I smiled as we went inside. Mel and the girls were sitting in the living room. The house smelled of soap, and Taylor was mopping at her hair with a towel. Mel intercepted Ashley as she passed by.
You need a bath, stinky girl. The tub is already full. Go take a bath.
Oh, Mom, I don't want to take a bath, Ashley moaned in protest. Mel got up from the couch, pointing down the hall.
I don't care what you want. You need a bath, and you're going to take one.
With her shoulders slumped, Ashley slogged down the hallway as she peeled off her clothes. Just as I sat down, there was a knock at the door. I looked over and called out,
It's open.
Jess came in, holding a plate covered with a dish towel. She came in and sat down on the ottoman.
Here's some of Miss Kay's cookies. I thought you guys would like some.
I flipped the towel off the plate and took one.
You thought right.
You didn't have to bring them over, Mel said.
Jess shrugged. I was on my way home anyway.
Pushing a crumb into my mouth, I asked,
How's Danny doing?
She considered the question for a moment before answering.
He's still very sad, not saying much.
I held up the last piece of the cookie before popping it into my mouth and asked,
Did he eat a cookie?
She smiled.
Yeah, he had one.
That's good. Danny has a soft spot for cookies. It'll take some time for him. How are the kids? Mel asked.
They're taking it pretty hard, too.
Edie is really sad. But Mary is staying close to her. Jace is staying with Danny. He won't leave his side.
Probably the best for both of them, I replied.
Jess looked at the floor for a moment, and she asked, We're going to have the service for Bobby in the morning? I nodded.
Yeah, first thing in the morning.
Then what? Mel asked. I let out a slow breath.
Then we go to town and hang the men responsible.
How many are there? Jess asked.
We have 3 of them. A few others are already dead. But there are more of them out there. I think the old man will know where they are after tonight.
What's he doing? Mel asked tentatively.
Let's just say he has a way with words, I replied, not wanting to go into details.
A breeze kicked up once the sun went down, and we spent the evening in the living room, listening to music on the iPad. The coolers I made were drawing air into the house, and that lowered the temps inside noticeably. Not to mention, just the introduction of fresh air. The house smelled good. It was comfortable, and lounging on the couch as the song American Pie played made for a sleepy setting. I woke up around 9, according to my watch, and carried Little Bit to her bed. The older girls were asleep on the floor, and I left them where they were. Mel was in the bed when I returned. She looked up and said, "Why don't you take a shower?" And she patted the bed. "Oh, really?" I asked with a smile. Stretching, I said, "I was thinking about it." "Stop thinking about it and get in there." "Good thing I took a nap," I said, as I flipped on the bathroom light. Chapter 9. We stood silently, gathered around the bird feeder. The earth was still fresh there. The smell of it filled the air. Its broken surface sparkled in the early morning sun, as countless drops of dew glistened and shimmered in the growing light. As was sadly becoming our custom, each was left to themselves to say their piece. A dry eye was the oddity, as most were wet with grief. Little Bit hugged Mel's leg and wouldn't look at the place. Kay stood close to Sarge, holding his arm as he patted her back and she dabbed tears from her eyes. Eric stood behind Fred, his arms around her. Jess stood with Doc, the two holding hands. Jace and Edie were with Mary, and Thad stood behind her, offering them all strength. Dalton, Ted, and Mike stood off to the side, more stoic than the rest. After a moment, Thad's deep voice filled the air. "He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death, mourning, crying, or pain. For the old order of things has passed away." Then he stepped forward and took up the cross he'd made and gently pushed it down into the soft dirt. Bobby's name ran down the vertical with the dates marking her life on the horizontal. It was a tasteful adornment to her grave, with its surface darkened by the flame. Danny looked up and nodded at Thad. Thad walked over to him and firmly gripped his shoulder. The two shared a look, but said nothing. It was often the way of men. Men who were not prone to speaking their thoughts could readily share them in this manner. And here, they did. "Oh, my love, my wife, death, that hath sucked the honey of thy breath, hath had no power, yet upon thy beauty." Dalton belted out in a voice that possessed surprising strength. I could visualize him on a Roman stage. He could project his voice so well he didn't need speakers. It naturally carried and seemed to echo throughout the woods behind the pond. Danny said nothing. He stood, looking down at the grave of his wife. It caused a fear to well up in me, an all-consuming and nearly insurmountable fear of having to do the same. It terrified me more than anything my mind could conjure. The thought of having to scrape away the earth to lay Mel or one of the girls into a pit, it made me physically ill, and my head started to spin. I had to get control of myself and push the morbid thoughts from my mind. We were here for Bobby, and I would remember her. But as I pushed those thoughts away, I promised myself that I would do whatever it took to prevent having to perform this for my own family. Danny knelt down and placed his good hand on the softly mounded dirt. His head hung, and he began to weep. His fingers clenched into a fist around a knot of dirt, and he softly pounded the ground with his fist. Dalton stepped up beside me and nudged me with his elbow and nodded at Danny. I knew what he was saying, and we stepped up on either side of him and gently raised him to his feet. He didn't resist, as his body shuddered from the sobs. We guided him back to the house, still clenching the fist of dirt. Everyone said their personal goodbyes, and one by one, they drifted away from the scene. I looked out from the porch to see Mel still at the grave, the last to leave. Mel had known Bobby the longest, actually longer than Danny. Mel was there when they started dating. I walked out to the grave as she wiped her eyes.
"You okay, babe?" I asked.
She shook her head.
"I just don't get it.
Why her? We were handing out food. We were doing good. Why would someone do that?"
"You can't explain evil."
She looked up at me, her eyes red, swollen, and wet.
"How much more suffering must we endure? What's the point? The world doesn't make any sense."
I wrapped her in my arms. It was easy to fall into the trap of thinking the world was against us now. There always did seem to be a new disaster or threat to be worried about. I took it day by day, trying not to focus on the distant future or past, but dealing with the issues of the immediate. But everyone had to come up with their own way of coping with it.
"I'm not leaving here anymore," she said, as we walked back towards the house.
"Okay," I replied, "but I'm going to town today. We're going to hang the men responsible for this." She nodded.
"Okay. One more trip to town. I want to see their faces when they hang. I want them to suffer."
I pulled her in and kissed the top of her head.
"Don't let the hate consume you, babe. It doesn't go anywhere good, believe me."
"Well, I'm going to watch."
"I don't blame you. But Little Bit can't go. The girls need to stay here."
She nodded her head. "I was already going to tell her sisters to watch her. I'll go with you. When are you going?" I was planning to go over to Sarge's place and see where they're at on the interrogation. When I'm done with that, I'll let you know. She stopped and stepped in front of me to face me.
"Do not leave without me."
I leaned in and kissed her forehead.
"I won't. I promise."
I made my way to Sarge's house. The garage door was open, and I was met with a curious sight. Micah was still tied up and hanging from the ceiling, albeit in a creative fashion. His legs were tied together and his hands were likewise tied together, but under his legs. A stout piece of oak was run under his arms across his chest, and this piece of wood was suspended from the ceiling. It looked uncomfortable as hell.
"Whose creation is this?" I asked, as I came into the garage.
Mike pointed at Dalton.
"It's that sadistic fuck. I've never seen anyone like him, and I thought I was bad."
Micah's body was racked with obvious pain.
"How long has he been like that?" I asked.
"Oh, since last night," Dalton replied. "I wanted to make sure he didn't have anything else to tell me."
"And?"
Dalton gave Micah a push, spinning him.
"I think we're good."
I walked over in front of Micah and grabbed a handful of hair and lifted his head.
"You ready to confess your sins in public? If you want to escape the rope, it's your only way out."
He nodded and croaked in a raspy voice that I was sure was raw from a night of screaming.
"I'll read it. Please, please cut me down. I can't take this anymore."
I looked around. "Someone got all this shit written down?" Ted tapped a notepad with a pen.
"Yep. Got it all right here. This one's been a naughty boy."
Looking at the two Cubans, I asked, "What about these two?"
"They won't say anything," Mike said. "The one is nearly dead, and the other just says he's a soldier following orders. Typical shit. He seems to be under the misguided assumption the Geneva Convention is somehow in play. Funny how animals like that will commit untold atrocities against civilians and then, when they're captured, fall back on perceived protection of the convention, I replied. Let's get them all loaded up and headed to town, I said. Dalton produced his kukri, and in one fluid motion severed the ropes holding Micah up. He crashed to the concrete floor, landing on his hands. But they were so numb from being bound all night, he hardly noticed. We pulled him to his feet and gave him clothes, which he couldn't put on without assistance. Dalton and Mike roughly helped him into a pair of pants and pulled a shirt over his head. His hands were once again bound behind his back, and he was stuffed, along with the two Cubans, into the back of the Hummer. I told Sarge I would meet him in town and left to go get the little red truck. The Hummer was full as it was, and I wanted to see if anyone else wanted to go. Wallner was at the bunker when I walked by and expressed his condolences again. I thanked him and asked if they needed anything.
No, we're good. You taking him to town?
Watching the Hummer and the Striker turn out onto the road, I nodded.
Yeah.
They've got to pay for what they've done.
Should have just shot them.
Hanging them in public will do far more good for everyone. If we just told the people we shot him and put him in a hole, they would never really know. There are already some rumblings in town that the army was responsible for what happened at the park.
That makes sense.
Let everyone see it, Wallner replied. I told them I would see them later and headed for the house. I went to Danny's to see if he wanted to go. He was already on the porch when I walked up. Thad was there with him.
You guys want to go to town? I asked.
They both stood up, the answer clear. I nodded and said, let me get Mel, and we'll head that way. The girls were sitting on the porch with the dogs. I told them we'd be back shortly and to stay around the house. Little Bit asked if she could go to Danny's house to play with Jace and Edie. I said she could, but that they needed to stay within sight of the house. She said they would, and jumped up and ran off.
How long are you guys going to be gone? Taylor asked.
Couple of hours, I replied.
Can we come?
Leanne asked.
I shook my head. No, kiddo. You need to stay here and keep an eye on your sister. Help with the kids.
I thought she'd protest, but she didn't. I went in to find Mel. She was ready to go, and I didn't even shut the door before we were heading back out. Thad pulled up in the little truck, and we hopped into the back. The air rushing by felt good. It was still warm, but it was moving. The market in Altoona was bustling with people. And even from the road, I could see people were trading the goods we'd just given them. It made me wonder what they were trying to get, why they didn't just eat the food. But it was bound to happen. The sudden influx of items no one had seen in a long time made them valuable, and therefore, they were de facto currency. The Umatilla market was also busy, with more people out than usual. It was good to see so many people out and about. I'm sure word had spread about what happened in Eustace, but it didn't seem to deter folks from getting out and gathering. As we passed the Publix, I saw Alex on the side of the road. He had a bag over his shoulder and waved as we passed. I waved back, noticing the boots. He watched us for a moment before turning and continuing his trudge down the road. As we passed through the barricade, I saw the old bucket truck on the side of the road. Terry and Baker had apparently managed to resurrect it. I thumped the roof of the truck. Thad slowed and pulled up behind the big truck. Baker was on the ground looking up.
"How's it going?" I asked.
"You're making better time than I thought you would." She nodded.
"It's going faster now. We've almost got the line to the armory ready."
I looked up at the bucket where Terry was cutting a sideline loose.
That's great. How long do you think?
We might have it today if everything goes all right, she replied.